Do you ever catch a foul ball as a fan or a home run ball?
Nope, I never have. I kind of listen. I kind of agree with you guys a little bit. I would say a bat, that would be something special. You know, you have the player's name on it, but I mean, no one. I mean, yet you bring a ball unless it's signed. I don't know that anyone gets real excited and say, "Wow, that was a ball that was fouled off by a hitter at a game."
Well, and the bat's tough because, like, Edwin Encarnacion he did it early in the season, lose control of the bat. It goes into the stands, and then four people have their hands on it. So who rightfully gets it? You got to go to court to settle it, basically.
Oh, it was insane just seeing that clip of the game against the Rangers. That guy was pissed.
Oh yeah, they were mad.
It was pretty funny just to see the reaction there. But, you know, bat, I understand a bit, but you're right. And if there's one guy you have a chance of getting a bat from, it's Edwin.
Yeah, Edwin's, he's very generous in that capacity. So, like I said, you don't want to be 23 and 22, but it is what it is, and you're right where everybody else is. I mean, and yet nobody expected the race to be this tight, teams this close to 500, and the other two divisions have Detroit and Oakland pulling away, and yet at the same time, nobody looks poised to take off and win 15 of the next 20. I mean, do you like where you are?
I mean, I think we're fine. Just like you said, you'd rather be well over 500. Certainly would rather be in first, though I'm not overly consumed with scoreboard or standing. So, you know, when you're looking at late May, but you don't want to necessarily be buried and be 10 games back. But I know there's a lot of theories about the AL East, whether it's down this year, parity. And I subscribe more to the parity component. And there's no question, you know, everyone's banged up to varying degrees. Pineda's out, Sabathia's out. You know, the Orioles are still a really talented club. Tampa obviously has Matt Moore out, but even still with the injuries, and I do think that there's a component where we're all beating up on each other. And, you know, this is the one division to me, you know, 1 through 5, that none of these teams came into the season saying, look, we're not trying to make the playoffs, we're rebuilding. You know, this is a division that all five of us are all trying to be competitive and expect to get into the playoffs.
How similar right now, Alex, is what you're seeing from Juan Francisco offensively to what we saw from Jose Bautista, what we saw from the resurgent Edwin Encarnacion when he figured things out? You can't put the cart before the horse, but like for John Gibbons, it's impossible to take his bat out of the lineup right now.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, I'd love to tell you I see similarities other than balls going over the fence with Bautista and Encarnacion. But the big, you know, obviously if we felt that Juan was about to be that guy, we'd be probably heavily engaged in contract negotiations and trying to get something done. But, you know, look, Juan's always had tremendous power. He's only 26, which is amazing considering the power that he does have. And, you know, power is becoming harder and harder to find. The one thing that he does that Encarnacion and Bautista didn't do, especially for power guys, is, you know, he strikes out quite a bit. And it's not to to disparage him, but that's, you know, one of the weaknesses in his game. And, you know, he has walked a little bit more with us. And if he can be more selective, that'll make him that much better a hitter. But, you know, you look at Bautista, even though he would strike out 100 times a year, you know, he was a guy that would walk 100 times a year as well. And Encarnacion was one of those really unique guys that, for a power hitter, never struck out. He would walk more than he struck out, or just his hand-eye and his contact rate was so good. So Francisco varies from those two in that respect, that, you know, he's one of those guys that will strike out 180 or 200 times a year if you give him all that playing time. And obviously versus the left-handers, but look, all that said, he's been way better than we would have expected. Also, like you said, you basically can't take him out of the lineup because we have to continue to ride this thing. And I do think being with a Bautista, being with an Encarnacion, he has a chance to get better because they can kind of show him how to prepare, study video, things like that.
It seemed like you were, I would call it an experiment last year at this time with Brett Laurie at second base. He's not close to being a full-time second baseman, is he? And you've talked about it before. Is this just an exceptional circumstance? And Juan Francisco's bat, as we mentioned, can't be taken out.
Right, exactly. I mean, Juan, you know, Brett's our third baseman. We didn't come out and announce that he's being moved. Because, look, being candid, it's not like Juan was a big free agent sign, and, you know, we came into the season expecting him to do what he's done. But, you know, he's performed so well that, you just have to find a way to get him into the lineup. And, you know, we talked to Brett, and he said, look, whatever the team needs, I'm going to do. And, you know, the one thing is, I do believe this, is you give Brett enough time, he could be probably a gold glover at any position defensively. And I remember the first time we saw him take ground balls at third base, we just traded for him. We had a mini camp at the Rogers Center in January. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't know that this third base thing is going to work. I mean, that's how rough it looked. And to see the strides he made and going into spring training and working with our infield coordinator, Mike Mordecai, to become the defender he is today, it's a tremendous credit to him and also to our to the guys that have worked with him. But you know, Brett's also the type that if you tell him he can't do something, he will run through a wall to try to prove you wrong. And, you know, Brett, I think if he had the reps, would be a plus defender at second base as well. And especially we know the arm strength, the athleticism, and the range. But, you know, we'll, you know, I know the manager will continue to mix and match and keep Juan in there. And if Juan starts to slow down, then we'll probably make some changes again.
Chase GM Alex Anthopoulos on Brady and Walker. He joins us now. Marcus Stroman, the optics of this is that it didn't quite go as planned in any capacity. What is the plan over the last over the next few weeks for a kid like Stroman?
Well, you know what? We didn't, I mean, I know when a top prospect gets called up, there's the hype, the expectations, all that kind of stuff. So, and I know, you know, obviously he was a starter down there, but at the time that we called him up, he's performing very well as a starter, but we clearly had a major need at the bullpen. You know, we'd continuously blown saves. The bullpen was being overworked, and we really needed a shot. We weren't prepared to pull anybody out of the rotation. And the other thing is, it's always preferable, if you can, to break a guy in out of the bullpen. It's not one of those things that if you have him make a start and he goes an inning or two, because he's getting hit, and then you have to wait another 4 or 5 days. And if he was to struggle again, you know, might have to send him back down a little bit sooner. In the bullpen, it's easier to bring a guy out if he has a bad outing, keep the outings to short stints, and also to manage when they come into the game. So, you know, once McGowan was transferred to the bullpen, you know, that's another right-handed power arm that could pitch late in the game. You know, we didn't want to keep Stroman up here to be the long guy or the 11th or 12th guy on the staff. And you know, we need to get him back and stretched out to be a starter, to be available for us if someone does falter or someone does get hurt. But the one thing with Marcus, he obviously had tremendous stuff, but it seemed like his last two outings, he was almost caught between being a reliever and being a starter, where as that starter, he's going to be a four-pitch guy and throw everything. And as a reliever, you really need to narrow things down and almost become a two-pitch guy. And I think transitioning into that mode, maybe it was a little more complicated for him. But you know, we love the fact that we were able to get his feet wet. And the next time he's up here, he's gotten through all those first, the nervousness, the family, all that kind of stuff. It's just trying to come up here and be competitive and try to help us win games.
Yeah, it's a good experience. He starts today for the Buffalo Bisons. We got about 40 seconds. Is there an obvious fifth starter candidate with Dustin McGowan now in the bullpen and Jay Happ starting tonight, looking like that fourth starter? Is there an obvious fifth guy for you and John Gibbons?
Well, you know, right now, Stroman being down, he has to be down at least 10 days, so that would take him out for a start on Saturday unless someone was to be hurt. So we're looking right now at guys like Todd Redman or Liam Hendricks, who's down in Triple A. He's performing very well. Strike thrower, he's only 25. He's had cups of coffee with the Twins, he's not had all that much success, but you know, he's very similar to Todd Redman, where you know, he's always been a strike thrower, and maybe if we give an opportunity, he'll have a chance. So between him and Todd, those are probably the two leading candidates, and we'll see obviously what happens the next few days and how our bullpen lines up before we decide on one.